Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Reassurance is knowing our pensions will be supporting you in the years ahead. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension today.
Drive Time with Katie Hannan and Cullum O'Mungoin on RTE Radio 1.
Yo, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Don't tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Don't tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I wanna really, really, really wanna zig a zig.
If you want my future, forget my past.
If you wanna get with me, better make it fast.
Now, I tell you what, I really wanna have is another 30-year break before I hear that again. Anyway, the Spice Girls there with Wannabe, that burst onto the
scene
30 years ago in 1996. It got us to thinking what other iconic albums turned 30 this year, and the man who's going to tell us all about it is Conor Bean, 2FM broadcaster who joins us in studio. Conor, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. I liked the two different reactions the minute that song started. I was like, I know we're going. Okay.
All right. Anyway, look, it is a phenomenon. It was a massive bit of crack in 1996 that filled dance floors. The birth of the Spice Girls, arguably the beginning of a movement amongst young people who were just all about having good, positive fun, and a lot of it are surrounding girls doing things together.
Yeah, I mean, look, the slogan they went with for the band was Girl Power, and it did sum up, I think, the optimism and the sense of fun that came with the Spice Girls, who did launch, it's hard to believe, 30 years ago this year. That was their debut single, you just played there, Wannabe, which still sounds like kind of nothing else. Like, it does sound a bit half-formed and a bit scrappy, and I think that weirdly was the charm of the Spice Girls. They had great pop songs, and they had a big marketing machine of merch and albums behind them, but they were also very chaotic.
They were real.
Were chaotic and funny. You watch interviews now and the five of them are all talking at the same time. They're unpolished in a way that's rare for pop acts now. So we're talking about albums that were massive in 1996. Their debut album, Spice, was undeniably huge, both in 1996 and a year later in 1997 as well. Say You Be There, Who Do You Think You Are, other big songs that came off of that album. The whole package around that, as we said, was huge as well. There was Lollipops, there was Deodorant, there was a movie a year later. But really, the songs had this kind of bright, kind of optimistic feel to them, and they were very compelling as a group. They reunited in 2019 for a massive comeback tour that started in Dublin at Croke Park. There's a lot of rumours that they might do something this year to mark the 30 years, even if Victoria Beckham still refuses to join the other four on stage for a live show.
That whole thing with girls, it wasn't a case of pick a band and who do you love in the band, it was who are you in the band when it comes to the Spice Girls.
Yeah. You could identify with at least one of them, if not you'd be like, I'll be Baby Spice in Schoolyard and you'd be scary and you'd do the routines. There was a whole thing around them.
I mean, it was so simple and genius. It was just extraordinary. Nobody thought of that before, isn't it? It was brilliant. Yeah. Okay. One album that you say was one of the biggest albums of all time. Just say that Cullum's expression right now is like somebody who has been killed.
Oh, softly, slowly, through information, through clips. And that was obviously the Fugees Killing Me Softly. Their album The Score came out in 1996 and it was one of the biggest albums that year and also one of the biggest selling albums of the 90s. And I would argue just a very influential and like memorable moment in pop culture as well. You know, the Fugees don't have that many albums and that much music to their name, but what they do have has stood out for people, and it's so, I think, iconic. I mean, Killing Me Softly, we just played, that spent 7 weeks at number one in Ireland on the singles chart. Obviously, reworked the Roberta Flack classic. One of the tracks on the album, Ready or Not, was sampled Enya, and they initially didn't get the clearance of the sample and then had to ask, and when she realised they weren't a quote-unquote gangster rap act, she said, fine, you can have the sample, you're a new band, have at it. So they're just such an interesting group in pop culture, and they've endured in a huge way over the years.
Right. I'd seen, as you mentioned, rap Tupac shot dead on his final album. He wasn't around to see the benefits, but it catapulted the sales of his album.
Yeah, I mean, 1996 was a big year for Tupac. Sadly, in September of that year, at just 25 years old, he was shot dead in what some argue was an ongoing feud between the West Coast and East Coast rap world. There's all kinds of conspiracies about who or what was involved with his death. But in February of that year, his album All Eyes on Me came out. At the time, it was his fourth album and it was would end up being his final album. But even in that first week, back months before he died, it sold like 500,000 in its first week and obviously went on to do even bigger things following
his untimely death and the continued conversation about his legacy. He was only 25 years old, which you kind of forget because people still talk about Tupac all the time now. Like, you walk around town, people have got a Tupac t-shirt they got in pennies. Like, he's an artist that has influenced so many other people. And I think this year, with the continued conversation about that era of rap, I would imagine there'll be a lot of people looking back on that album and all the stuff that came out posthumously as well. Like, he had a huge hit in the 2000s with an Elton John sample, and he was dead years at that point. There's a conspiracy that, no, he's still alive somewhere just churning out hits. I sadly don't think that's the case, but he's someone that people still talk about to this day.
Yeah, I saw a newish book out on him by that by Irish Vietnamese journalist Dean Van Noon, who is, it's about the politics of Tupac, so, you know,
he's
there's
exactly,
still books
he's
very, in him.
Yes, exactly.
And then, of course, as one rapper left us, another arrived on the scene with this.
We're on the spit that Wonder Rhyme a clip. Me and my conglomerate shall remain anonymous. Caught up in the finest click. Live out my dreams until my heart gives out and roll with grave. You know exactly what this is about, what y'all mean. Handling since a teen, I just shout. Like the point guard off your favorite team. Without doubt, my life ain't rosy, but I rolled with it. My mom was fine till the dough hit it and told me that the mo did it. And now it's kosher, things are so acidic. I blow a digit on the diamond in a minute, but no chickens. Watch how we're walking, cause
Mr. Knowles.
I love that. Yes, let's go with that. Let's flip the tape script and call him that for sure.
Jay-Z, Mr. Beyonce.
Yeah, I mean, that was a track there called Dead Presidents, taken from Jay-Z's debut album, Reasonable Doubt, which came out in late 1996. He was only like around 26, 27 years old when that album came out. And it did well, but really, a few years later, he would become a much more mainstream kind of commercial figure and really take over not just rap music, but pop music in general between his collabs with at first just creative partner Beyonce, who then he was, yes, we're married and we've been together for a long time. Like, he would have these hit songs, but this album, aside from just introducing the world to Jay-Z, a lot of purists and music fans really think this was actually his strongest album ever. That kind of cliche of the early stuff is better, he sold out, that kind of conversation. And Jay-Z is a business mogul as much as he is a musician now. So it's funny to think that 30 years ago, as this continued conversation about East Coast and West Coast rap was happening, someone who would go on to be so influential, not just in rap music, but in pop culture in general, was just making their start in the career. I mean, he's a business mogul and kind of someone who's the pinnacle of New York rap for some people. So it's interesting to think that this is where it all started. I'm curious, Jay-Z sometimes gets a bit of a knock for his maybe being very capitalist and being all about the money now. So I'm curious, will he maybe revisit this album this year to kind of go, this is where I started, so I used to be kind of cool, don't forget. So there may be some chat about this album this year.
But I thought rap was all about the money as well. Isn't
yeah, exactly.
Part of
I think it's now the culture has shifted. People go, oh, is someone getting this far a win for a group of people, or is it actually just taking the wealth for yourself? So, I mean, he's still a figure people chat about all the time and are influenced by.
Okay. And 1996, also the year critics were loving this.
I got my feet.
Right, for anyone who, for whom that flew under their radar, Fiona Apple there with Sleep to Dream. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that comes from her album Tidal, which came out in 1996 and really took off. The album actually became very big in 1997 when tracks like that and her massive song Criminal kind of took off and were like a crossover hit for the MTV generation. But she was also a critical darling. She was part of a number of kind of women who were singer-songwriters who really broke through in the mid-90s. The biggest being, of course, Alanis Morissette, who in 1995 kind of took over the world with Jagged Little Pill. And people kind of compared Fiona Apple and Alanis Morissette, when I would argue musically they are quite different, but Fiona was only like 17, 18 and was this very outspoken and kind of seemingly worldly teenager with this kind of skill that seemed beyond her years. And you go back to the music she released then now and it really holds up and you can see why she became so iconic. And there's so many acts now like Phoebe Bridgers, Lana Del Rey, Billie Eilish, who've either name checked Fiona Apple directly or you listen to them and go, they sound like they listened to this album when they were teenagers or when they were starting out. So I'll be curious if there's any kind of anniversary tour or live shows around this album this year, because Fiona Apple doesn't play live much and has only released 5 albums total. Her last one came out in 2020. So it'd be interesting if this sparks some conversation.
Okay, in the time we have allowed to us left, thankfully, we're going to skip over Jamiroquai.
Hold on.
No.
Yeah, no, but this one.
Go on.
This is an absolute classic, yep.
I don't even wanna waste your time. Let's just stay the man.
George Michael, of course, with Fast Love from his album Older. And that was, there had been a 6 year hiatus there.
And that was only his third solo album, because obviously his Wham days were very successful. And like a lot of pop stars, the inevitable solo career, it doesn't always go well. But George Michael's one of those stars where it's like the solo stuff is nearly bigger than the original outfit.
Incredible to think 1996 and he still hadn't come out at that stage.
I mean, in a year or two later he would have, because obviously there was a scandal around the cruising thing in LA and all that came out a year or two later. But it's interesting because this album is quite older. It sounds like a good, it's a good way of setting up the album because it's a little more thoughtful and mature, but also there's a lot of anguish there. I mean, Fast Love is basically about anonymous hookups. The song Jesus to a Child, which was a huge hit at the time, he revealed later on was written about a partner of his who had died from AIDS-related illnesses in the early 90s. So this album is an interesting one to go back to now because it feels like he was telling us all the whole time and we kind of didn't really know or didn't want to know, perhaps given the culture at the time. But George Michael, he battled label woes, a lot of kind of bigotry in the music industry, and I think he's someone who's influenced a whole generation of queer artists now. Can be out at the start of the career in a way that George sadly wasn't able to be initially when he first emerged.
All right. Yeah. Thanks a million for that. And a good note to end on there. I'm going to get one plug in for an album before we go. February 1996, an Irish band called Roller Skate Skinny released their album Horse Drawn Wishes, and it is in my top 10 albums of all time. It's an underappreciated banger of an album.
Is it on vinyl or anything?
I don't know.
Could be reissued for this year.
Make there you go.
To ask the band.
Let's hope.
Anniversary.
Right. Okay, back with news after this.